Yep. So just to let you know, everything you all say will be on the record.
Yeah. So I laugh hit record. Uproariously at the funny parts, although there aren't any.
I don't think.
Yeah. That's, he always gets mad at me when I put in things that or do a story that's not funny. And it's like, well, I don't know what to tell you.
None of your stories are funny. I make them funny. But you make it harder for me to. We'll get into it.
Okay. All right. We ready then?
Ready. Okay. Yes, I go.
What?
Go.
Oh, okay. Welcome to the special Dead of Winter episode of American Hauntings, the podcast dedicated to the history, hauntings, legends, lore, and the dark side of America's history. American Hauntings is written and performed by Troy Taylor, that's me, and is produced and co-hosted by Cody Back. Did you want to say that's me?
That's me.
Okay. This episode is being recorded live at the annual Dead of Winter Food Drive in Alton, Illinois on February 7th, 2026. As you listen... There, see?
Yes, look at that. Have a response. Thank you.
As you listen, please remember this isn't usually done live or in front of an audience, so you may have to suffer through mistakes. I think we've got all our technical workshops already taken care of.
Don't.
Restarts, fixing typos, and cursing that you usually don't hear. So welcome to all the guests who are here with us today as we record and to all of you who are tuning in to hear what happened on Tuesday, February 10th. We appreciate all of you more than you know because, as we always say, we couldn't and definitely wouldn't do it without you. Do you think I purposely choose to hang out with him? Anyway, that's not true. I actually do.
We'll talk later.
So anyway, where was I? Oh, so we appreciate all the support from the listeners and Patreon supporters we've had over the years and all the ideas, reviews, comments, and you've given us too. See, that was awkward. Season 10 of the podcast is just getting started, literally one episode, and 2026 is going to mark the official start of our podcast network. We currently have 3 shows and more to come. If you keep listening, we promise to keep making them. So thank you. But for now, today's show. Oh, after this introduction, sorry. Usually when we do this live show for Dead of Winter, I try and either pick a story that somehow fits in with the current season somewhere, or I try to pick one with a winter theme, but I didn't this year. I just sort of stumbled across this story, and it was so interesting I had to put together an episode about it. I was doing it for my next book, Shameless Plug, In a Dark Place, which is about sinister hauntings, possessions, and poltergeists. That's a plug. And while digging through decades of insane stories about Ouija boards, I found this one. So I hope you like it. The whole Ouija board started off, this whole Ouija board thing started off as a toss-off chapter about things that people think have something to do with demons, and I just got sucked in. First of all, I've got to tell you that when you're doing research, you end up in a lot of rabbit holes and find a lot of things you never knew. For instance, there were a lot of girls born in the 1910s and 20s, and a lot of racehorses for some reason. I don't know what the connection there is, named Ouija.
Seabiscuit.
A lot of them. I don't know why. Also, sports writers, until like the 1960s, made a lot of references to using Ouija boards as slang for picking winning teams, scores, and what players were getting traded to what teams. And they also talk about Ouija boards a lot in political reports, too. And again, I don't know why. So there were a lot of really stupid articles that I had to look at that had nothing to do with what I was looking for. But I also found some very weird stuff that I wasn't expecting. Front page stories about police officers accepting leads from Ouija boards to find murder suspects, missing kids, and stolen items. Or all the people who made news, front page news, by the way, using Ouija boards to predict the end of World War II, to pick D-Day, Germany's surrender. And then there were the two secretaries of the War Department who used a Ouija board in early August of 1945 and predicted the exact day of Japan's surrender. Now, I mean, that could have been maybe they knew something from the War Department, but it was still kind of weird. Anyway, it was all big news at the time. So trust me, the news was a lot more fun back then than it is now. But anyway, I hope you enjoy this story. It is a very weird tale about how a Ouija board was used to try and catch a serial killer that most of us have never heard of. All right. I'm pausing for music. Yes, there we go. Okay. At just after 6 a.m. on August 4th, 1941, a 26-year-old waitress named Evelyn Anderson left her home in the Bronx to walk to the nearby restaurant where she worked. but Evelyn never arrived. It was after 9 o'clock that evening before her lifeless body was discovered in an alley. She had been strangled by a powerful assailant who'd left finger marks embedded in her throat. Her clothing had been torn, but she had not been sexually assaulted. Investigators believed her attacker may have been interrupted during the assault. A few days later, Evelyn's watch was recovered from a New York City pawn shop, hawked by a man named Charles Wolfuck. I don't think that's the right pronunciation.
I don't either.
I'm going to say Wolfuck.
I'd say Wolfuck it.
I don't think. Anyway, some guy named Charles. Anyway, when questioned, he swore he had received the watch from a lady friend, Hazel Johnson, who in turn pointed an accusing finger at a woman named Mandy Reed. After being questioned, Mandy said she'd gotten a purse which contained the wristwatch from her friend, Jarvis Cato, from Washington, D.C. A background check on Cato revealed 2 arrests for indecent exposure in 1935, after which he had worked part-time as a taxi driver, supplementing his income by acting as a police informant. But indecent exposure turned out to be the least of Cato's crimes, as detectives from both Washington and New York were just about to learn, with at least a little help from a Ouija board. On November 2, 1904, Jarvis Theodore Roosevelt Cato was born into an African-American family facing the harsh realities of the Jim Crow South in rural Kershaw County, South Carolina. He was the oldest of 8 children born to a preacher father. Those specific names and further details about his parents and siblings are missing from historical records. He grew up in a place and time of systemic racial discrimination that severely limited access to land ownership, economic advancement, and education, leading to poverty and sharecropping dependency. These conditions, worsened by segregation laws and discriminatory practices, profoundly influenced daily life and opportunities for families like Cato's. But let's not start feeling sorry for a man who would become a monster. In 1929, Cato left South Carolina for Washington, D.C. to live with his brother and seek employment during the widespread movement of black Americans from the rural South to northern cities that became known as the Great Migration. After moving to the city, Cato moved into a modest house with his common-law wife, Emma, who supported the family through work as a housemaid. Cato himself held occasional odd jobs, including as a driver, but he reportedly had sustained a head injury in 1925, after which he'd been prone to strange behavior, or so his defense attorneys would later claim. His years in D.C. were marked by escalating sexual deviance, and as evidenced by a police report that included 4 arrests for indecent exposure, beginning in the late 1920s and continuing into the early 1930s. He spent short periods in jail each time, but went right back to offending soon after each release. Cato targeted vulnerable women. He often tracked down those walking alone at night, approaching them with offers of assistance. He did the same by automobile, posing as a cab driver and offering rides to single women during rainstorms and other bad weather. His crimes occasionally extended to New York City, where he committed similar offenses through 1941. He lured victims to secluded locations where he raped and robbed them of personal items like purses and watches or small amounts of money. Eventually, the assaults escalated to murder by strangulation. He later confessed to the police the killings were preceded by reading detective stories and pornography, which triggered uncontrollable urges that he described as spells, during which he blacked out and lost control. The first of Cato's victims to die was Florence Darcy. She'd been raped and strangled in 1935, but the case had been closed a year later with the conviction of what turned out to be an innocent man. Josephine Robinson was next, murdered on December 1, 1939. Lucy Kidwell and Maddie Stewart were killed 2 months apart in September and November 1940. Ada Puller was the last victim in 1941, murdered on January 2nd. Now, until this point, all of Cato's victims had been black, but things heated up for the Washington police when the strangler claimed his first white victim. Rose Abramowitz, a 23-year-old bride of only 1 month, hired Cato to wax some floors in her home on March 8th, and he murdered and raped her as a thank you. He left her sprawled across a bed, snatched $20 in cash from her purse, and fled the apartment. It rained in Washington on June 15th, and Jesse Elizabeth Strife, a pretty War Department clerk, was relieved when Cato stopped to offer her a ride. Mistaking his car for an off-duty taxi, she climbed in and was driven to a nearby garage where Cato raped and strangled her, hiding her white umbrella in a trash container. The nude body of Jesse Strife, who went by the shortened version of her middle name, Betty, was discovered in another garage about 10 blocks away. It was Betty's murder that finally galvanized the city. Up until this point, the D.C. police initially treated the murders as isolated incidents, but the death of the 23-year-old civilian clerk shook Washington to its core, led to a congressional investigation, and even a personnel shakeup at the Washington Police Department. This forced the authorities to consider the idea that the murders were linked, with criticism falling on officials suggesting that earlier victims, who were, as I mentioned, all black, had not received adequate attention. It was at this point in the still unsolved case that a Ouija board played a small but important role. The Ouija story leaked out, much to the chagrin of police officials, a few months after the murder of Betty Strife, and involved a woman who lived on the southeast side of D.C. She didn't want her name to be used, so reporters referred to her only as Mrs. Z. In June, soon after Betty's body was found, Mrs. Z read about the murder in the newspaper and became curious. She fancied herself a spirit medium, and friends claimed she was remarkably proficient with a Ouija board. She decided to visit the garage where Betty's corpse was discovered and said later she had a, quote, strong feeling that Miss Strife wasn't murdered there or in any other garage. So she went home and consulted her Ouija board, which told her, quote, the killer was a middle-aged Negro, height 5'7", weight 161 pounds, had big hands and scars on his face. When he met Miss Strife, he was driving a car that looked like a taxi, which he sometimes used as a taxi. In appearance, he resembled a cab driver. He jerked Mrs. Strife into the car during a downpour and strangled her with her suit belt. Now remember, at this time, the police had no idea that Jarvis Cato existed or that he was African-American, 36 years old, was the same approximate height and weight as her description, and had scars on his face or unusually large hands. It was hard to believe that her, is it hard to believe her Ouija board was so accurate? Yes, but all of Mrs. Z's information was corroborated by Mrs. Ira Peck, a friend of hers and the wife of Lieutenant Ira F. Peck, who was then acting chief of Washington PD's Detective Bureau. He was then actively involved in the investigation of Betty's murder, and his wife urged Mrs. Z to consult the police. Well, she did so, reluctantly, because, as she feared, Lieutenant Keck didn't put any stock in her story. But his wife did. One day in early July, she returned to Mrs. Z's house, and together they consulted the Ouija board again. Mrs. Keck took notes on everything the Ouija told them and checked every point. Even more convinced of the authenticity of the messages received from the board than she had been before, she went home to try and persuade her husband to use the information in the case. Well, Lieutenant Keck, at first, flatly refused. He said he couldn't send his men on a Ouija hunt. He'd be laughed out of the police department. But he realized he was dealing with the most vicious murder the city had seen in years, and it was still unsolved, and he didn't have a single clue worth following. So several nights later, Lieutenant Keck and fellow detective Sergeant Aubrey Tolson called on Mrs. Z, and she brought out the Ouija board. Keck, according to Mrs. Z, was armed with a long list of questions that he asked of the Ouija like a zealous prosecuting attorney. He asked about the case and was allegedly told several things he didn't know. The killer, the board told him, with two accomplices, drove Betty to a lonely ravine near Barstow, Maryland, about 50 miles from Washington, where she was raped and murdered. Her clothes, the Ouija added, were thrown into a deep pond formed by a stream which passed under a culvert on a little country road. Now, Mrs. Z, who had already been informed of these new developments from the board several days earlier, had made two trips to Barstow with friends and had found the pond just as the Ouija had described. She said she'd never even heard of Barstow before the board tipped her off. Now, all this was enough for Lieutenant Keck, and he assigned Sergeant Tolson to follow the Ouija angle and probe the pond for the missing clothing. Now, if you're recalling that Betty's umbrella was later found in a trash container, you'd be right. But at this point in the investigation, it was still missing. So Sergeant Tolson and his partner took Mrs. Z with them to Barstow. After they arrived, she watched from the culvert while the men fished in the muddy water with small hooks. They didn't find anything. But as Mrs. Z later complained, they, quote, didn't try very hard. But Lieutenant Keck wasn't giving up on the angle, not just yet. Mrs. Z said the solution to the case could be found with a certain man who lived in the 1700 block of U Street Northwest. Sergeant Tolson was sent to track down the individual, but was again unsuccessful. Now, at this point, I tend to believe Mrs. Z when she said that Sergeant Tolson didn't look very hard for the clothing in the pond, because he definitely didn't put much effort into the search for the Ouija board suspect. Now, how do I know this? Because after Cato was arrested, it was learned he'd been living in the 1700 block of U Street Northwest and sometimes worked from a cab stand on that block. Well, the Washington police were still chasing leads offered by the Ouija board when Evelyn Anderson was murdered in New York, and an arrest warrant was issued for Jarvis Cato. He was picked up by Washington authorities on August 29th and almost immediately began to confess, not only to Evelyn Anderson's murder, but to the murders of seven women in Washington, including Betty Strife. The confessions not only corroborated the New York and D.C. cases, but also exonerated a man named James Matthew Smith, who had already served 5 years of a life sentence for the 1935 murder of Florence Dancy, a murder committed by Cato. During Cato's confessions, he provided details of the crime that could only have been known to the perpetrator, such as the exact location of body disposals and items left at crime scenes. He led the police to the garage where he'd strangled Betty and directed them to recover her white umbrella, which he'd discarded on Swan Street Northwest. Betty's clothing, by the way, was never found. Cato claimed he couldn't remember where he'd left the clothes because of the uncontrollable spells that compelled him to commit his crimes. So could they have been in that pond in Barstow? Who knows? Maybe. Cato was indicted in October 1941 on charges of first-degree murder and the death of Rose Abramowitz. The D.C. authorities believed this was the case that had the strongest evidence against him, and if they didn't get him for that one, they had others to fall back on. The trial began later that same month, and during the proceedings, the prosecution presented Cato's signed confession detailing Rose's assault and strangulation, along with corroborating physical evidence such as items pawned by Cato that matched victim descriptions from related cases. The defense attorneys argued, though, that Cato's confession had been given only after he'd been beaten and tortured while he was, quote, sick and weak. But the jury failed to buy his story and deliberated 18 minutes before returning a verdict of guilty with a recommendation of death. Cato remained on death row for over a year, still attempting to recant his confession, but his claims were rejected by the courts until he finally ran out of appeals. He went to the electric chair at the District of Columbia Jail on January 15, 1943, at the age of 38. As he entered the death chamber, he sang a spiritual he'd learned at his father's church as a boy. He showed no remorse for his crimes and made no further denials in his final moments. The execution brought closure to several unsolved cases in New York City and Washington, D.C., and since Cato's confessions linked him to at least eight murders, a small amount of peace was found for the victims' families who'd been living with uncertainty for years. His crimes earned him the moniker of the D.C. Strangler, and later experts would point to him as an example of one of the few modern serial killers operating before World War II. But his notoriety didn't last, and the years since he's been mostly forgotten, as has the strange incident with Mrs. Z's Ouija board, which had offered an uncanny description of a monster that no one knew existed. Well, thanks again for listening to American Hauntings, and we hope you'll stay tuned for the postmortem section of the episode. It's coming up right after these messages from our sponsors. Stick those in. All right. So, ready for a little more American Hauntings this week? Well, we're back with the postmortem, the part of the show after the show where we sharpen our knives and dissect the episode. My name is Troy Taylor. I'm the guy who narrates and writes the show, and across from me, well, beside me, is my friend, producer, and co-host, Cody Beck.
Dear God, I thought that was never going to end.
I know. I didn't think that was
long. It just kept going and going and got more upsetting and more upsetting upsetting. It used to be like about the Titanic. Or like something not funny.
Like that's cheery?
It's long enough ago.
More than 8 dead people.
Yeah, but it got more upsetting as the time. I feel like that's the podcast in general. It gets more upsetting as the time goes on. Oh, but no. Hey, Troy, thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you all for coming to this event and like doing something great. Like Troy and I joke all the time, but not really. But it's like the one good thing we do
all year.
And it really does make a difference. And Troy, look, we're in a new spot.
I know.
We're in a new place.
Yeah, it's cool.
It freaks me out, but I like it a lot at the same time.
It freaks you out at night.
It freaks me out at night.
Coming in here at night is
I had to walk all
weird.
These stairs yesterday by myself and carrying stuff. And Coy was with me for a little bit. And, you know, Coy, MP. So, you know, I felt safe. But when I was asked, hey, will you take these things upstairs by yourself? And I was like, no. No, I don't want to do that. But thank you all for coming. It makes a difference. And I wanted to say, like, please continue sending things to the hotline and the emails. And if they're short and sincere, you know, I might read them on the show. We're going to continue
What if they're not sincere?
If they're not sincere, then,
definitely going to read them, right?
Yeah. You know what? I don't want to fight with people anymore on air.
That's fair.
But, yeah, we're going to continue to review all that and read stuff. And, this building is just – it's a little – this is the first time I lived here. I lived a mile away for 18 years, the first 18 years of my life. Never went into this building at all. So this was a new experience for me. But, like, what's it been like since you've been here?
I don't know. I've been here 3 or 4 times.
Okay.
I've been here very many times either. So, but, yeah, it's a cool spot. Definitely cool.
Thanks. Yeah.
A lot of great stories. What?
give me something.
Well, I know, but I'm looking at the sheet and I'm like, we're not doing what's on the sheet.
No, I'm not on your sheet.
I know. Why are you not on my sheet?
Because
we're not to that yet. Though.
I do things on my own time.
I know, but we're not doing things. Okay, so anyway.
You want to plug your stuff?
Yes, we have stuff to plug. Plug that first so we can get it out of the way. So, I already told you I was going to threaten you about the Haunted America Conference. Tickets on sale now. Speakers and presenters, after-hour events, tours, ghost hunts, workshops, special events. I will say, just in all joking aside, there are a lot of the after-hour events that by the time we get to the first month of ticket sales that are nearly sold out.
They're going
to
be sold. They're going to be
so
sold out.
So it's one of those things where if you're just coming to the conference, I mean, we got lots of seats there. You're in good shape. But if you're wanting to do any of the after-hour stuff, you should – really should, you know, get on it because stuff is filling up, so you don't want to wait too long.
It's going to be sold out.
It will. Usually the after hour events, we might end up with a few things left over by the end, but last year, I don't know if any of you noticed this or not, but last year I really overbooked Saturday night and way too many things because I thought, oh, well, I have all this stuff. And, then there were too many things, and then people are like, well, I wanted to do that, but I'm like, okay, well, we'll fix it. So we don't have nearly as many things, so I just got better quality things. Oh, hope there aren't any presenters or anything here from that. No, we're all good. We're all good. So,
what are you doing?
But anyway, guys, do definitely check that out as far as if you're thinking about coming to the conference. That's our next big event of the year, which I am excited about. Also, if you're here from out of town, if you're not and you haven't stopped by the new American Oddities Museum, please do. It is a much bigger space. We've got new exhibits and displays, a much bigger bookstore and a gift shop. And we're open 12 to 5. Well, we're open today, but you're here. But we'll be open tomorrow if you're going to still be in town. Because we are now having our dinner events are going to be at the new museum. We have a we don't have to like move everything out of the museum to set up for dinners anymore. We have a whole separate level. So anyway, you and all of our tours are going to start from there. So definitely check it out if you get a chance. And the last thing I want to mention is if you guys I've ever wondered what I'm working on when I post photos from film shoots and then I go, I'm working on a thing and I can't tell you what it is. You can finally see one of them on Monday, February 9th, on History's Greatest Mysteries, which is on streaming and the History Channel, your Discovery Plus app, somebody told me last night. It's about werewolves, I know, but it was fun. Check it out if you could see me hanging out with Lawrence Fishburne. Hey. Not really, but even the so everybody always asks me. So did you meet Lawrence Fishburne? No.
Did you red pill?
Yeah, no. And so then I said that to the crew because I know him, and they're like, "Yeah, we haven't met him either. We don't.
No,
they don't even meet him. He shows up, does his thing in like one day." But it will be on if you're interested in watching it. I thought I would put the word out there. So, all right, now I'm done. So
cool.
Do whatever you want now.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Gosh. All right. Yes. I want to talk about the episode, but I want to also talk about just the space, dude. I mean, this
back to that.
This space is so much nicer than what we are about to do. I feel like it's, look at this, come on.
Oh, no, yes, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I'm like, what?
Decorations cool. And history and
it's cool.
Legacy, and it's just you and I just like yelling at each other about ghosts and horror movies and being friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, but hey, we're somehow here, and so thank you so much for coming out to all of this. I love that we do this event, and it's like I said, the one good thing we do every year. Thank you all for your donations, and you're ready to dive into this story?
Sure.
Okay, so this one is
grim.
It doesn't really leave a lot of room for comedy.
No, it doesn't. And honestly, there are much worse stories. That I found in this one
sure.
That are going to be in the book that I found digging through all these old newspapers that were much worse than this one.
Yeah,
so,
no.
I mean, I thought we'd use this one since it's somewhat tame.
Thank you. Yeah, I hope A Dark Place was worth it. Because my job is to try and ask the everyman questions to make people laugh and then lighten everything up and get ahead. And then you drop this shit on me?
I know. Well, it's kind of like the murdered kids stories that I like to do. I had planned an entire season of murdered children just for Cody, but I was talked out of it, not by Cody, by other people.
So there have been a few episodes, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, yeah, there always are a few.
Marion
Parker.
Parker, yeah. And then I think this one where when I was typing up my outline and stuff, I started to cry because I was like, this sucks. It sucks so much. It sucks so much.
It's a pretty awful story.
And I'm trying to make this, you know, bring some levity. I'm trying to make people laugh. And I'm sitting here like, this is a funny joke. Like, you know, like, yeah, no, it's not going to work. But gosh, okay, let's just, we'll get out ahead of it. But let's talk about Ouija boards, because that's a big thing in a lot of the stuff that we work with. And actually, I got my first Ouija board from one of your conferences. I wanted a raffle.
Oh, yeah.
I have one in the trunk of my car right now that is like completely ripped up just because of travel and how everything works. My mom, RIP, and my aunt were like, you can't have any of this or anything. And I was like, okay, if I come home and my apartment's cleaned, like automatically, then I'll give a shit. But like until then, like the Ouija board's fine.
It was funny to watch the, we all know what Ouija boards are. I don't need to tell you what they are.
They're little toys.
But they literally were meant to be fun. They always were meant to be fun. They were supposed to be entertaining, just a way for people to have a good time. And honestly, when going through newspaper stories about Ouija boards up until, like, I don't know, the late teens, early 20s, 1920s, all the stories were kind of lighthearted for the most part. I mean, some of them were a little grim, like the woman who her mother died and the Ouija board told her to leave her mom in the living room for 2 weeks. And then, bury her in the backyard. I mean, that's gross, but kind of funny.
Listen,
I mean, you can at least make it funny. Or the traffic policeman who a Ouija board told him that He needed to take off all his clothes and stand in the middle of an intersection
and
direct traffic.
Who hasn't
Those things are funny. And there were a lot of stories and a lot of predicting things about World War One. And one of the biggest stories was there was a newspaper in Omaha, Nebraska, which is obviously a cosmopolitan city anyway.
Hey, I've been there a lot and I like it.
There was a newspaper office there that used a Ouija board to predict the end of World War One, and it ended up on the AP wire. And I mean, for like years, everybody would refer back to this newspaper office because they claimed it was a scoop, that they knew when the armistice was coming. And they didn't at first tell how they knew. They said it was secret information, and then they admitted it came from a Ouija board. And nobody went, oh my God, you people are crazy. I mean, sure, someone did, but no one publicly did. People were just eating this up. And I thought, boy, times have changed. And then, but then they started, by the 20s, it started to kind of take on a whole different, people started to get really weird about Ouija boards and, you know, and evil ghosts and demons and murders. And then it becomes a lot of, you know, the Ouija board told me to, you know, like the, you know, my dog told
Which
me to kill a bunch of people.
Court.
Now it's a Ouija board. And at first people were really, they were taking it seriously in a lot of legal cases I found. Yeah. And then by like the 60s, they were going, yeah, that's not going to fly. I know it's told you to shoot these people and behead them, but, the Ouija boards aren't going
to
cut it anymore. And so it was funny to watch the change over time on how seriously it was taken till it became something evil in the 70s and 80s, satanic panic.
Sure.
Every story, there were lots and lots of stories about using Ouija boards and because you worship Satan. I mean, it was a lot of that, but that was if you wore black t-shirts and listened to, Motley Crue, you know, also a Satanist, so using a Ouija board was minor compared to all that. But then it went through that phase, and then it gets into the 90s and 2000s, and you still have some of that, but then there was a lot of the woman who decided that her son-in-law was evil and stabbed him to death and then tried to kill her entire family.
Yes.
It was like, whoa. It just got weird over time.
Well, I know we've gone through this before, but like, did it start out as a toy?
Well, I mean, you can still buy them in toy stores.
Yeah, I know.
It's a toy. It started out the Fold, when Fold, started making them, they were making them. Well, at first it wasn't necessarily a toy. It was a game.
A game.
And so it was a parlor game that you could play with your friends at home. And that way, it kind of an offshoot of, it was an offshoot of seances, for starters. But you had to be, to do a seance, at the time, everybody thought, well, you've got to be a medium to do that. And so you've got to go to actual seances. Well, that didn't work out for everybody. They didn't have time or the inclination or the place to do it. So that sort of kind of faded in interest. And so people wanted to do stuff at home. So you could stay home and tip tables and do automatic writing. But then the Ouija boards came along and that seemed to be the way to go because it was easy. They invented the planchette in France, and so then you had a pencil in it, and you'd put your fingers on it, but that was hard, too. And so they wanted something that was easy, and so Ouija boards were easy, and they were fun. And, they made them, they mass-produced them starting in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and until 1966, Fold owned the copyright to Ouija. You could make all kinds of talking boards, and we've seen them all. There's all different kinds.
Talking boards.
Zillions of different kinds that were knockoffs.
Did they do talking?
No, and then Parker Brothers bought it again.
Okay.
The Monopoly people bought it in 1966.
Monopoly guy.
And Parker Brothers now still produces official ones. But
got it.
You can get any kind of board. You just can't buy, copyrighted Ouija boards unless you buy it from Parker Brothers.
Well, so something I want to talk about is like with ghosts, I'm skeptical about a lot of things, but I don't just like walk into a room and be like, fight me, ghost. Like, I'm not a ghost, bro. Because maybe it's real and I don't want to be disrespectful. And so I'm the same way with Ouija boards and stuff. But I do know the idiomotor effect is like a real thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's where people want to go. But also,
nine times out of ten, I think, more.
But I want to talk about that one time.
I know.
Because I know you have experience.
We did an entire couple of episodes on Pearl Curran in St. Louis, Patience Worth, wrote books and thousands of poems and books and things.
Doesn't make sense.
Is a woman who, you know, had an eighth grade education and was writing things that were amazing people. And to me, even though I've seen lots of places where they've tried to debunk that story, it's pretty hard to do. I mean, some of the stuff later on, I think, as things started to fade for her, she needed to keep the story going.
Yeah.
And so that probably was nonsense. But some of the early stuff was weird. You know, it was some very hard to explain kind of stuff. So
But you have some experiences with Ouija boards, and there's a picture, I believe, in like an attic or something that we have posted somewhere.
The limp attic.
Can you just talk about any weird shit that you have?
Yeah, because, you know, I don't always... I mean, so many things come through Ouija boards that I just don't, you know, put a lot of stock in. It's interesting sometimes. And, I mean, this story was interesting because this woman came up with some things you could really – tough to pull those out of a hat.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, an exact description of this guy. And so – but that's the story I used rather than the stories of people claiming, hey, a Ouija board told me to murder my family. Yeah, sure it did.
I've tried that.
You're nuts, you know. But in this case, it was something worthwhile. But yeah, that thing with the Limp Mansion, that was in the attic before they had refinished it. So that was a long time ago, early 2000s. But it was always interesting to take Ouija boards to the Limp Mansion because during the 19-teens and 20s, Elsa Limp was a spiritualist, also a suffragist in St. Louis, but she used to hold seances at the Limp Mansion on a regular basis.
We all are buying supplements, taking vitamins, and following the latest workout trends, but what if the newest tip from your favorite health influencer isn't actually what your body needs? True Diagnostic helps you find out the exact supplements and lifestyle changes that can make a difference and which ones might just be wasting your money. If you're spending money on supplements, workouts, and wellness trends, it's worth knowing what is actually moving the needle for you. That's where True Diagnostic comes in. My at-home test was simple. The instructions were clear and easy to follow, and it came with a prepaid envelope, which made it convenient to send back because I don't have any stamps. I'm super stoked to receive my results in the next 2 to 4 weeks so I can dial in exactly what needs to be changed to improve longevity and health markers. Because I have plans for this podcast, so I gotta be in tip-top shape, and True Diagnostic is helping me get started. One of the tests True Diagnostic offers that I've taken is called True Health, which measures your current health. It tests over 105 biomarkers, including vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and fatty acids to understand system's health right now. It focuses on energy, metabolism, inflammation, and nutrient status today. And it provides your top 3 health actions for the next 90 days. You can get even more info if you opt in for the combo kit, which includes the True Health test and the True Age test, which reports on longevity and aging. The experience and process is so simple that even Troy and I were able to figure it out. You order online and the kit ships right to your door. It's a quick single finger prick at home, then you drop it in the prepaid return package. You can get digital results with an easy to follow 90-day plan in your inbox. Your only job, follow the 3 most important actions you can take for 90 days, then retest to see your progress. You can get a one-time kit just to get a baseline of where your body's at currently, or a subscription to measure progress over time. Also, True Diagnostic is trusted by top longevity clinics and health professionals, not just consumers at home. Right now, our listeners can get 20% off at TrueDiagnostic.com using code HAUNTINGS at checkout. That's TrueDiagnostic.com and use code HAUNTINGS for 20% off today. Choose True Age, True Health, or the Combo Kit as a one-time purchase or subscription.
And so... I always like to bring like Ouija boards from like the teens, like really old ones, and bring them there and see what would happen. And usually they don't really spell out much of anything, but there is that one weird photo of it was just me and these 3 young guys and one of their dads who brought them to spend the night there. And we were the only people in the attic. And there, I knew it was the early 2000s because I'd just gotten one of those. Remember when those Sony? Okay, this is for you older folks here.
All right, take it back.
Remember when those Young Sony cameras came out that had like the night vision capability, and they, if you put the filter on it, it could see through people's clothes. Remember those? Yeah.
I'm sorry. What?
Yeah, that was a thing. So
hold on.
I really wanted one, and they were expensive, and I know that I got one because I got an advance for writing Weird Illinois. And I used part of it for that, and that book came out in 2005.
To get a see-through
so
camera?
I can tell you how long ago that was. But so I was taking photos with that camera up in the attic.
Of course you were.
It was pitch dark in there. It was pitch dark.
Bet.
You couldn't see anything.
Not for your camera.
No, you had to have a special lens and some kind of light to see through clothes.
Right.
It was, and I don't even know if it worked.
Yeah, whatever you say.
It did work, by the way. Anyway, so I just had it on, and it was taking pictures in the dark, and I couldn't see anything, but I was taking pictures, and I took a picture of those guys using the Ouija board around the table, and there was someone standing behind them in the picture.
It's a creepy picture, and the fact that it's from you and everything, that's why
I'm like, this is weird, and I believe it,
and I can't explain it.
I showed it to the guy, because the dad was standing next to me, and I'm like, who is this? And he said, there's no one else in there with them.
Yeah, there's no one else.
I know. So it is somebody kind of standing behind them, but it's like they're in motion, and you can see the guys around the table. It's a weird picture.
It's a weird picture, and I really like it.
But I don't know if that has anything to do with the Ouija board, though. They just happen to be using the Ouija board at the time.
Well, it's you and us going off on our, you know,
that's
our tangents.
You on a Ouija tangent?
Yeah. Anyway, okay. But yeah, it talked about how Ouija boards can do, you know, war predictions, and I initially was going to ask, like, yeah, broken clock kind of thing, but
they made a big deal about World War I, but then when the World War II one came around, it was like 4 or 5 sentences, and somebody put it on the AP wire that they predicted it, and it was weird because, I mean, they did predict it to the day, but on the other hand, these girls work for the War Department. Hello. So they should know, right? I mean, theoretically.
Maybe.
I don't know. But anyway, yeah. So that one didn't get as much publicity as World War I did, but it was
still kind
of fun.
Oh, my gosh. Someone has their cell phone on it. I'm kidding. I'm not kidding, but also, come on, man. You're messing up my sound. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It's usually us that messes up the sound.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know why you're complaining about anybody else.
Because it was funny and it happened in real time.
Okay.
Just let me talk about comedy. I wanted to talk about the victims here because you mentioned let's not start feeling sorry for a man who would become a monster, and I think that's very appropriate because.
For one, I like his name. I don't like him, but the name is interesting. That his parents named him Jarvis Theodore Roosevelt Cato.
Yeah,
I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah. Okay. So,
But also, it's the name of the guy who lived in OJ's guest house or something too, right? In that Cato.
That same name?
No.
The same four parter?
No. Just the Cato part.
Was he driving the Bronco?
Except for the Green Hornet. Again, that's for you old folks out there. I don't know any other Green Hornet. Okay.
I like old. Okay. Anyway, but also he had a head injury, which we see a lot of times.
Yeah,
that
was
excuse.
Only briefly mentioned. But it was.
It might have been impactful.
Well,
literally,
it could have been because I mean, look at Charlie. You know, the guy that killed his entire family on Christmas.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
that was
Lawson.
That was one of the other ones that made me cry. Why would you bring that up?
He was insane. So,
oh gosh.
What I really like, honestly, the one thing I really like about the victims are the names. I like all the names.
That's what you like?
Evelyn,
about the victims.
Hazel, Florence, all these old lady names,
Gertrude,
that we don't have anymore. And we should bring them back. Don't you think?
No.
I mean, how many? Anybody know a Doris under the age of 30?
Anybody know a Gertrude?
Yeah, Gertrude, Clementine, Josephine. See, all these things should come back. Hazel. See, these are all good names.
I'm not saying they're not good names.
But they're very 1930s and 40s names. That's why I like
them.
Can
we give it another 100 years till I'm dead, and then they can do that?
Well, Rose. Rose is a good one.
Rose is beautiful.
I was just looking at all the names.
You're just trying to pick a fight right now.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's, gosh, I guess, okay, can we talk about, I mean, the real thing here is Mrs. Z, right?
Yeah.
With the Ouija board, and I guess at some point you get so desperate for leads or something, or
yeah, that's,
anything
that would
makes
be
sense.
Well, I think that his wife just harassed him into going because she was convinced this lady was for real. Now, I kept thinking, Mrs. Z, if that was really her last initial, if her last name really started with Z,
yeah,
how hard would she have been to find? on the southeast side of D.C., a woman with a last name Z. But she didn't want it to be used in the newspaper. But apparently she did, like, seances for her friends. She didn't, was not a professional medium, but I could not find out.
She wasn't a professional.
I couldn't find out anything else about her. Well, I mean, she didn't do it for money. I mean, people didn't pay her and come over. But somehow Mrs. Keck was a friend of hers and had found out by, you know, I guess that she liked to use a Ouija board. And she, Mrs. Z, got interested in this girl's story because that's, and I did kind of mention that after this Betty Strife was killed, they really, there was a huge shakeup at the D.C. Police Department because now they were, well, because it was a white woman that was killed. And so that became a big deal. And she also worked for the War Department, again, War Department. It's also, it's World War II. She worked for the War Department, and it became a huge deal. Congress had a hearing about why weren't these murders being investigated. They were obviously the same person, and they were. It's just that it was a different time. When I, and I said at the end that this was a rare example of a serial killer. I mean, you know, we all know serial killers were not invented in the 1960s. I mean, you know, you can go back to, you know, the 1800s and before, but nobody talked about it. It was, you know, a multiple murderer. They didn't have the name serial killer, but the height of serial killers in the United States began after World War II because those guys came home really messed up. Not all of them, obviously, but a lot of them did. And it changed the entire fabric of our country. We talked about that when we did the Hollywood, the L.A. episodes, because there were so many. They started calling them werewolf murders, these brutal, horrible crimes that were taking place, you know, including like the Black Dahlia and things. But this was something that serial killers really kind of became a thing after World War II.
Well,
and this
like
was before
storm.
That. And so Congress was asking, why aren't you looking into the fact that these were all murdered together?
Connected.
Well, it was the, you know, the built-in racism of the time.
Sure.
You know, they just figured that all
the
these you know, African-American women that are dying, that's, well, you know, that's bad neighborhoods and that kind of thing. And instead, they were obviously matching crimes. So anyway, Mrs. Z reads about this in the newspaper and the big shakeup and the congressional hearings. She gets interested and whips out the Ouija board and starts digging into it on her own.
Yes.
So,
and just to kind of caveat off that, I just want to say, like, the victims were Florence Darcy, Josephine Robinson, Lucy Kidwell, Maddie Stewart, Ada Pooler, Rose
Strife.
And Jesse Elizabeth Strife, Betty. I just want to say, like, we're not
Rose Abramowitz.
Just I want to acknowledge them while I then go to make fun of a murder.
Well, I mean, you know,
and take them down a notch.
Yeah, it was, and a couple of those were, you know, Evelyn was in New York. Obviously, that was what kind of got a lot of attention. That was the only one that got a lot of attention in New York.
That's how
and
it
he
started.
Floated back and forth.
Yeah.
And, you know, had killed more in the D.C. area as his kind of, as he kind of ramped up to it. Because he built up to it. Went from being
you can see the
weenie
the,
wagger to
the
a, you know, to attacking people and then robbing them and then went
and
into
then,
actual assaults.
Yes,
and
yes.
then finally murder.
That's how it escalates.
So, I mean, it's classic progression, you know. So.
So what do you how do you make sense of, though, like the predictions about, you know, the 1700 block that lived and all
really
that.
Really interesting. Well, that's what made me think that maybe Mrs. Z had something going on. I mean, you know, psychic-wise. Because, I mean, even the stuff that she had from the Ouija board when she gave the description, I mean, it really matches the guy. Although, who wants to hear that 36 is middle-aged?
That's
although
how old
I guess
I am right
it,
now.
I guess it was in the 1940s.
Are you kidding
that
me?
Was middle-aged, I guess. But
am
I mean,
die?
The height was right. The weight was right. They said there's even a photograph. There's a newspaper photograph of him posing with his hands up like this because his hands are massive. I mean, they're really big. And so it was one of those powerful hands.
Oh,
you know,
no.
Everything she described, you know, worked. I mean, we don't know if... you know, we know that he grabbed her during a rainstorm and stuff, but as far as the stuff about the pond and the clothing and Barstow, we don't know.
Apparently they didn't work hard enough.
My guess would be that Lieutenant Keck got drugged there by his wife, and while the newspapers tried to make it sound like he really thought it was a great idea, he was probably still pretty reluctant because he didn't even do it. He made this other guy go do it and put him in charge of the Ouija hunt. And obviously, Sergeant Tolson had little interest.
Yeah.
And so we went out there and, you know, just kind of fished around in the water for a while and nothing here.
Didn't find nothing.
And, you know, Mrs. Z was kind of pissed because she's like, well, he didn't even try very hard. Sure. I mean, that was her quote. And obviously, he probably didn't because she came back with the information about how the guy they were looking for lived in the 1700 block U Street, and he did. I mean, he did live there. But nobody, and he's like, yeah, I'll ask around. Nobody knew who I was talking about. Well, he probably didn't, because someone probably would have went, oh, yeah, that's the guy that was up the street. And that's where he lived when they arrested him. So,
Yeah, I mean,
So Ouija board or not a Ouija board, I mean, this worked. Came from somewhere.
Yeah, something worked, and it came from somewhere. It could be random, could be not, I don't know.
Or, and let me rain on the parade,
this whole thing
could have just been cooked up by the newspaper for a good story.
That never happens.
Yeah. So always that to consider, that
trust the media.
Maybe there was some exaggeration put into the accuracy of it by a newspaper reporter who got jazzed by this because it did make front page news.
Of course it did.
But, you know, that's a just devil's advocate thing, you know, so who knows.
Yes,
but
Al Pacino.
Cool story no matter how you look at it. So.
Keanu Reeves. So the jury deliberated for only 18 minutes, which I feel is amazing.
Yeah.
And then they've been calling the DC Strangler, and this is not an original joke, but like, we got to stop calling people cool names.
I know,
like, it
right?
has to be like,
I know,
little dick guy, killer.
Yeah, well, and
that's not an original joke.
They do try that sometimes, and it does work, you know, calling them out by listing all of the problems they have. They just
high
make stuff
dropout,
up and
loser,
talk about what a loser is just to get a reaction.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
stop
so.
Hyping
but
them up.
DC Strangler, does, I mean, that sounds like an episode of The Night Stalker or something.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
So it's a cool name, but nobody used it for long. I mean, it's still out there, but it's not like everybody puts them in. Listen, he had 8 victims. That's quite a few. That's a pretty good string
of murders.
Way more than I have. And it would have been, it should have been. Hey, it's more than Jack the Ripper. We talk about him, and you know, but no one knows
Holmes,
who
right?
the DC Strangler is. Don't start with that. So,
Okay, so he eventually goes out the way of the electric chair.
Yes.
And I was thinking about it. I think I'd rather have firing squad, probably.
I don't know, because what if they miss, or what if you just get wounded, or. What if,
I finally feel something.
I don't know. I've watched a lot of movies where people get shot like 4 or 5 times and Bruce Willis just keeps going.
Okay, you want.
So I don't, you know, I don't know about the firing squad thing.
You watch a lot of movies.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Spoke of somebody who's never been shot.
Yeah, I think we've lost a little something since we stopped using an electric chair.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know why it's now. I mean, because if people, unless they're, you know, is Kaylin here somewhere? Unless they're innocent. Oh, God, there she is. Okay,
hiding in the very fucking back.
So I know. So,
like
I didn't want to talk about. Let's say for sure they did their crimes. I want it to be painful. And I think the electric chair, we've all seen The Green Mile. We know what happens when you don't wet the sponge, Percy. So I think, though, that this guy would have deserved it, right? So, obviously there were screw-ups with electric chairs, and there were screw-ups with hangings, there were screw-ups with the gas chamber, and now we just do, like, you know, put them out like a dog going to sleep.
Expect you to kind of dismiss my jokes and everything, and you kind of, like, went down the rabbit hole with this one.
I did.
One, so.
I did. Well,
I'll introduce us again back to just be like, that was a great story that we just talked about.
Yeah, I prefer crimes that are punished by painful means.
I just don't want it on record.
Yeah. Well, whatever. I'm going on record by saying, bring back the electric chair.
Bring back just me just getting to punch somebody. is there anything else you want to talk about before we open it up to audience questions?
No, I don't even want to talk to you now.
I, yeah. It's fine. I know we both know where each other live. Does anybody have any questions? Doesn't have to be about this episode. Doesn't have to be about
or whatever.
Right yes. there. Oh, what do you got? So the police never considered that Mrs. Z might be some kind of accomplice because she had so many details.
Well, if they did, it was not in any of the records that I could find. I mean, I could definitely see your point on that. I mean, I think, you know, different time, I guess, you know, and maybe they saw her as someone genuinely trying to help but was a nutcase. I mean, because they dismissed... I mean, they really did not take her seriously. I mean, it sounds like they did because he went on a Ouija hunt and they had no clues. But I honestly, I think I was being generous to Lieutenant Keck. I think his wife just pushed him into this. And a newspaper reporter got wind of the story and decided to write it up. And I'm sure he was not happy about that. So I think that the stuff that they were... See, at that point, they didn't even know this guy existed. I mean, she's given him all this information that later would turn out to match. So they didn't even think it was close. Afterward, did they think about it? I don't know, maybe. But we don't know anything about Mrs. Z. For all I know, she was a, you know, 80-year-old woman who lived on, you know, who couldn't have been part of it, you know. So I don't know, but that, I mean, it's a good question. So.
I think it's a great question because a lot of times it's like people that commit the crimes kind of come up and be like, hey.
Oh, yeah, that want to be part of it. Yeah,
yes, or, help, you know, what do you got?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, we'll go you and then you. Yeah.
Oh, really? So there's another Cato that Inspector I didn't even know. I was still stuck on the Green Hornet and the dude from the OJ trial.
Damberger.
So those are the only Catos I know. So now I know another one.
Hey,
awesome. So
Damberger.
Bring that name back too. Cato.
Cato.
Nah.
No, we probably shouldn't.
That along. So, yes.
What you got?
The gentleman who was already been convicted and put in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Did they let him out? Did they have a trial? Good.
Again, different time, but yes, they did let him. Oh, I'm sorry, you wanted to repeat that back so everybody could hear it. Yeah, it is a great question because someone had been convicted and spent 5 years in prison, but they did reverse it, and there were separate stories on that. The newspapers had stories, too, about him being released.
Yep.
So they did bring him, once this guy confessed and was able to give them all the information about, you know, to verify and corroborate everything, they let him out. So it was a little easier back then than it is now. Yeah. Right, Kalen? Yes, very hard now, but
not
much easier
record.
In 1941.
Yep.
So.
Sorry, I want...
Has he been innocent? I mean, was he one of those guys pulling the usual suspects?
Well, let's... Yeah, he was... Well, there's a combination of things. It was a black victim...
Oh boy, how much
black
time
accused perpetrator made an easy solve for the white police department of D.C. at the time in the 1940s. And he was at the wrong place at the wrong time, and they pinned it on him. And I looked over the stories. I was curious, too. And looked over the story, and they didn't have a lot of evidence at all. And in my opinion, they don't have a ton of evidence on this guy. If he hadn't confessed, they would have never caught him. And they would have caught him, but I don't know how they would have proved anything.
That's why I was confused that he
because
confessed
there isn't,
at all.
There isn't a lot. He confessed because,
pressure?
You know, well, I don't even know if it was that. I think he just wanted to, you know, talk about what he'd done kind of thing. And so, I mean, obviously the guy that he did not confess and insisted he was innocent, and now they were able to prove that he was, and they let him out, so... He was set free, so at least that's good for him.
What are we doing on
time?
It's 11:05.
So we got a few more minutes, about 10.
Okay, yeah, sorry, and I do want to repeat question. Sorry, I'm just...
Yeah, sorry about that.
No.
I just got excited and answered.
What you got? Hey, do you work out?
Yeah, a little bit. Once in a while. I don't have a question, I have a comment.
Yeah.
But I also have a... really long list of... I love to describe hangings in detail.
Yeah, and he does.
In my stories. Anybody who's ever read any of my books where someone gets hanged. So a lot of detail.
I've only seen like a few, and it's different.
Yeah, well, because half the time...
Depends on the
neck breaks. Don't fall just right. You know, they obviously the key is to fall a certain amount of distance so that your neck breaks. Well, and if your neck doesn't break, you hang there and strangle like AJ Holmes
did. We talked about this on our last episode about
minutes.
The neck breaking versus strangling.
Right. And so, yeah, Gary, that definitely would be a much worse way to go.
Act
I
like
think.
You couldn't do that with your bare hands. You're huge.
I'm sure you would. The Charlie Berger story, people were, when they hang Charlie, people were writing in from multiple states wanting to be the hangman.
Right.
And I thought, what is wrong with you people?
Just look at our audience. This is what's wrong with people. And we cultivate it.
Yeah, that's true.
Any more questions about anything, everything? Yes, ma'am. When you were digging through all the stories, did you find anything else that might be plausible or connected or anything?
I found a few that had some interesting things to them as far as where things were or people that were tied to things. But for the most part, I found lots and lots of stories about people being told to do things by their Ouija board, which, again, is like the son of Sam being told to kill people by his dog. So there's a lot of that, and a lot of people blaming Ouija boards for things, and you know, setting things on fire and things because the Ouija board told them to burn down a house or whatever. And I mean, there's a lot of really crazy stuff, but there are several different murder cases that I was able to really dig into. That were linked to Ouija boards, but this was probably off the top of my head, but you got to remember that my last month has been like a blur because I've done nothing but arrange that museum. And so I can't even remember. I went back and looked at the beginning of the chapter I was working on. I'm like, I don't even remember writing that story. So I really had to look things over a bit. But that was probably one of the better. This is one of the better ones as far as it being kind of eerie, you know, as far as the accuracy of it. Usually the accuracy is not really discussed much in the stories.
It's dumb. And it's
because
fake.
They're, you know, people using it as an excuse for something. Or they're just hilarious. And so like to mention those as well. I mean, there is a good one about, and again, not any accuracy, but a young girl who murdered her father by shooting him in the back with a shotgun because the Ouija board told her to, and her mother encouraged it, and she and her mother were using the Ouija board, and the Ouija board suddenly spelled out that her dad was evil and that she should shoot him so that her mother could marry a handsome cowboy. I'm not joking. Who happened to live next door? What do you know? The 15-year-old girl shot her father and then said, but I was told, my mom told me that I have to do what the Ouija board says.
Kids are so dumb.
Things will happen. And so they arrested the mother, too. But the poor girl spent 3 years in like a reform school and then was released. Mom was tried twice. The second time, she went to prison for a few years, as she should have. But the second time, she was retried and went free because the jury believed that the Ouija boards. Yeah, I know.
Wait, did the 40s, mom get out before
Ouija
the daughter?
Believed that what the Ouija board said was accurate. Yeah.
Wait, did the mom get out before the daughter?
No, they tried her twice. They tried. Well, she got a new trial. She was found guilty the first time and got a new trial. And then the second time she was found not guilty. There was also a case in 1994 of a guy who had been accused of murdering this honeymoon couple and had gone to trial, and then he was convicted and sent to prison. And then it was discovered by his attorneys that on the night before the jury returned their verdict, that a couple of the jurors were drunk, they were sequestered, got drunk, were hanging out together with the Ouija board, and asked the Ouija board to contact the spirit of one of the victims, and the victim said that the guy had committed the murder. So they told the rest of the jury the next morning at breakfast and found him guilty because the Ouija board told him that they should. Well, so then when his attorney found out, of course, they threw the trial out and had another one, but he was convicted anyway. So he probably did it, but, you know, you can't really do that.
Apparently you can.
So there's some, yeah, there's some wild legal stories out there.
Well, I do the same thing. Like when Brooke and I will talk about doing chores and stuff, I'm like, let's use the board. And mine's
always
sleep.
It always says that you don't need to do
mine's
it,
like
right?
Sleep.
Yeah.
Hers is like dishes.
Yeah. So see, same
see?
Thing.
See, it's a weird thing. It's a weird thing. Okay. Anybody actually have actual questions? Let's go right here and then I'll go back there.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and it's about as accurate as a Ouija board I've found that, yeah, anybody who's using their AI as actual facts, you may want to double check them.
I don't have enough time to talk about this.
GPT is as accurate as a Ouija board.
That's so cool. Usually. Use it for coding,
yeah,
bro, and tell me.
It's probably not great. Yeah, but yeah, good point.
Yeah, I like that, but also I'm going to fight you later about this.
Okay.
All right. It's good for some things if you're smart enough to know how to use it. Well, anyway, okay, somebody back there. Yeah, you in the black right there. Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Two hands. Yep.
Do you want to repeat that?
Sure. So basically asking, since the psychic came in and all that, do we see an increase in this case, in Troy's research about this case, do we see an increase or an influx of psychics and people, you know, predicting things coming in about this to say, hey, we have some facts about this case, we have thoughts about this case?
That's been going on for a very long time. But as far as
cases, I would imagine?
Yeah, as far as Ouija boards go, I saw a lot of that back in the teens and 20s, especially when they were so popular and spiritualism is kind of in a new wave. There were a lot of people reporting to the police, and they would normally just brush that stuff off, you know, and because people would all the time, they would flood the police departments with tips, and so many of them would be from Ouija boards or psychics. And that still happens, but you might also remember that episode of The X-Files when they were talking with the guy. And it's always, you know, the body's located near water or, you know, and that still goes on. There are still, and there are some, but I mean, you know, there are some psychics and not so psychic who want to help out the police. And there are times when the police will accept the help. It really just depends on the department, but it happens constantly.
And
so it's still, I know, and I think in some cases of desperation, people will look into it. There are also so many things. Do you remember, and this was, and again, this might be for the old folks, pre-internet Montel Williams show. Remember when Sylvia Brown would show up on there all the time? Now, you want to talk about a phony. And talked about the kid that was dead, that had been kidnapped, and then he shows up like 2 years later. So, unfortunately, people like that gave it a really bad name, where there were some people out there that were actually doing something legitimate and helping out. And, you know, I don't know how all that stuff works. But I think enough of you who have been around our events or have read any stuff or heard me talk, you know, I don't really take a lot of solid stuff from psychics. I mean, there are a handful of people I think that I've met in my lifetime that I think have something the rest of us don't have as far as psychics go. But man, if I had a dollar for every person when I did a tour in Chicago who told me that their grandpa was a driver for Al Capone, and I'm thinking, how many fucking drivers does this guy have? Okay. Or now on the opposite end of the state, it's my aunt, uncle, grandpa was a Shelton or drove for Charlie Berger. Now, I mean, listen, one night I talked about...
Oh, I know Chance Berg.
I talked about the gangs, and I had 17 Sheltons there whose names were actually Shelton. So they actually believed. But I get a lot of that, and, you know, you can imagine that if I had a dollar for every person who told me they were psychic, and some of them may be, you know, but I find that the more you brag about it, the less chance I'm going to believe you. Because I don't know. I just don't buy the flashy stuff, I guess.
No.
I don't know. It's just me.
I think it's more like...
I'm not saying that, and I'm not even saying that people are lying.
No, I think it'd be more like the Constantine sort of thing, where it's like you're just a troubled individual that keeps themselves and is killing themselves slowly.
Yeah, that's probably
true.
If that's
really what's going on. And also, everybody can tell me any of their stories and any of the things going on. Just know that most of the time I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I still listen.
Because
I don't know what's true and what's
I don't know for sure either. I just
like comedy.
Yeah, it's just that's just usually I look at things kind of with a jaded eye usually.
Well, I mean, because we're jaded people.
Well, I guess I've learned that over
life
years,
beat us down. Anyway, what are we doing now? What do we got?
We're going to close her out, I think.
Well, any more questions before we wrap up?
Oh, all right. Back one there? Last one.
One last one. What you got? Tell us about
the
Ouija
boards
in the museum.
Some of those were just, well, everything that's in there now are just things I've collected over time. None of them are thought to be haunted or anything. They're just the favorite ones I have. So I'm not running a Ouija board museum because there are good ones. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Jeff, who brings that traveling show that
comes
amazing. To the conference, that's an amazing collection.
Amazing.
And that, listen, I'm already down a rabbit hole trying to track down things I can buy for the museum. I don't need to collect Ouija boards too. But I do run across really cool ones sometimes. And so I've tried to just put in some like unique ones that are unusual in there just so that, you know, we've got them. And, you know, people are bothered by Ouija boards. So there are people who come into the museum and won't even go near the case where they're located because there are so many dumb stories that have gotten started about how evil they were and their, you know, portals to hell. And,
I can understand.
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, you get into the 80s. And, you know, every newspaper, there are stories, you know, you'll put in, like, just like for the year, I'll put in 1935 Ouija stories, right? And it'll give me reference to, like, 800 stories. And most of them are about people, sports writers who use Ouija boards to pick who's going to be on the Cardinals next season, or a racehorse named Ouija who won, and you have a ton of crap to go through. But there'll be a bunch of interesting stories in there. And then you get to the 80s and the early 90s, and you put in Ouija, and it gives you, like, 16,000 stories because they're all from, like, you know, like Mike Warnicki, the fake Satan guy who wants to tell you about, oh, you'll become possessed. And it's like, come on, man, you know? So it's a lot of wading through garbage, which is, I mean, that's writing any book, as it turns out. But it was tough to weed it out. So I spent a lot of time doing that. But it was fun. Yep. I love going through old newspapers. So I killed probably like 100 trees printing stuff out.
Wow.
But I'm
you
also
didn't have to say that.
Well, I know, but I'm old and I can't see the screen. The newspapers, I mean, it gives you the option to enlarge them, but listen, they're printed very badly, and they're all scans. So I have to print them out, and I bought, I don't know, why am I saying this?
I bought this
clamp-on lighted magnifying thing that's the size of my head.
Oh, wow.
And I just
so
put
it's
it
huge.
On my desk and look, and that's the only way I can read these things. So, yeah.
Cool.
I'm becoming more blind as time goes by.
Can you and I make a pact that the next time one of us has a daughter, we'll name her Ouija?
Oh, God, yeah. Which I'll never have one, but
thank you.
Maybe so, you will.
If
someone will name their child Ouija,
I want to.
I will give you a lifetime pass to the conference.
I want something, anything
else. The first
person. Anything else.
Not everyone.
I want anything else.
And not a middle name, not a nickname. I want to see the birth certificate.
No, this chick's going to be Weege.
Oh, Ouija Clementine. Or Josephine for a middle name. Either one of those would be fine. Long's first name's Ouija.
I feel like we've held up this audience long
enough.
Yes,
we've held them captive long enough. Thanks again for checking out the story and postmortem for this week's episode of American Hauntings, which is part of the American Hauntings Podcast Network. We hope you love the show, along with the other shows in the network. And if you do, we hope you'll tell people you might think will love it too and encourage them to listen. If you get a chance, leave us a review wherever you listen, which makes it easier for people to find us. To find out more about all we do, check out the website at AmericanHauntings.net. where you can find everything we do there, including books, tours, ghost hunts, dinner events, Haunted America Conference, and American Oddities Museum. And while that makes American Hauntings sound big, it is a very, very small business that is very grateful for all your support. Now you.
Thank you. All right, this episode of the American Hauntings Podcast was written and narrated by Troy Taylor and is produced and edited by me, Cody Beck.
That's capitalized, so he feels the need to do that every time.
Yes. To find out more about the show, check out the show notes or go to our website, AmericanHauntingsPodcast.com.
I'm going to put it in like size one font.
If you want to find out more about the show or the podcast, you can reach us via email, text on the hotline, or Facebook, Instagram, and we're often where we're hanging out. Thanks for listening. We definitely wouldn't do it without you. But before we sign off, Troy doesn't know about this. Look, this man has been putting on this food drive for what, 25, 26 years now?
Seven. 27 years.
We joke about it, it's the one nice thing we do every year, but look.
It really is the one nice thing I do every year.
You are helping people. You all are helping people.
Yes,
and you're all coming together.
Everybody else.
I just want to say thank you all very much for helping people in the time of need when they need this shit. And I just want to give like a round of applause
of you guys.
For everybody that's stepping up to help the city and everybody that needs help. So until next time, goodbye.
So long.
See you later.
All right.
God.
This episode was brought to you by the American Hauntings Podcast Network.